Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. We're going to be talking today about winter damage and what ways people may need to work with their yards, their gardens, their trees. Aaron Style, let's start with that cold. We had some really cold temperatures this winter. What damage or problems might people be seeing from that?
Yeah, well, with the polar vortex that happened in February, I know there's some folks who are concerned about some of their garden plants. One of the good things that happened during that same time was we had really good snow cover that time of year. And so many of our herbaceous plants and those things that would have been under the snow will likely not see very much damage because of that insulating layer of snow. And all of the plants that are well suited for our climate or are from areas that are very similar to our climate, you know, those zone 4 plants in particular, will likely be just fine after the cold temperatures that we saw earlier in the year. So it's only really the marginal stuff, the stuff we're pushing the limits on, that we might see some damage on our Japanese maples, maybe peach trees or sweet cherry trees, maybe flowering dogwood. And even the damage on those will likely look a lot like some tip dieback, especially on some of those sensitive species. And when you see the tip dieback, you know, I always kind of wait till about late spring, early summer. Anything that's still brown at that point in the first part of June, I'll just trim back to the green. We could also see some flower bud dieback. So most of the flower buds on these trees are not as hardy as the vegetative buds are. So if you do have like a peach tree or a sweet cherry, it could be very likely that you won't get good flowering, if any flowering, this year. Now, that won't impact flowering going down the road in subsequent years, unless, of course, we get to experience that again next year. But this year, if we don't have good flowering, you might not have a good fruit crop this year because of the cold.
Richard, did you want to add something?
Basically, I think with the peaches, when you get temperatures of minus 18 or below, that typically kills the flower buds. And I think most of Iowa experienced that.
Yeah.
So I really don't anticipate any flowering on those.
So that will mean no peaches this year.
No peaches. And the same with sweet cherries. They're a little bit hardier, maybe minus 20. But again, most areas got down to minus 25, minus 30. So again, they're probably not going to bloom this year. But hopefully they'll leaf out. And if they do, there's a potential for next year.
Mm-hmm. So with these sweet cherry and peach trees in particular, will a person not know whether this is a problem until it's the time for flowering and they don't flower? Is there anything they could see now that would indicate the problem?
Well, if you went out and took off some of those buds and cut through them with a knife, inside, if they were frozen, they're going to be brownish. If they're still viable, if they're still alive, they'd be greenish. So if you went out, and they are kind of small, so it's kind of hard to do, but if you took one up, out for the tree and split it, you'd see that brown tissue, and that basically is dead.
And anything to do with those trees this year in order to make sure they're as prepared as possible to, you know, potentially flower and fruit next year, since there won't be fruit this year?
Not really much. You can go ahead and prune on any dead in maybe late May or early June. Definitely do not fertilize them in the summertime, because that would encourage late season growth, which may not harden before winter, so don't do that. If we have a dry summer, you can water periodically. That would be fine.
Yeah. Just try to keep them as healthy as possible.
And Aaron, one of the things you mentioned going into the talk about the cold was the snow cover. And we did have a lot of snow this year. What kinds of impacts will that have on trees and shrubs and other plants?
You know, we had a lot of snow, especially in February, late January through February. And what that caused, especially being late in the season, is I've noticed around town and just everywhere I go, there's probably a higher rate of rabbit and deer damage this year. So rabbits in particular, you know, they'll feed all winter on things, but when there's snow on the ground for an extended period of time, especially late in the season, so they've been going all winter. And, you know, they're starting to get really hungry. If there's nothing for them to get at, they will start to strip the bark off of woody plants, young trees and shrubs. And they're going after that cambial layer. That's the active tissue that's transporting water and nutrients from the roots to the upper part of the plant. And that has a little bit of nutritional value. It's not as good as some of the other things, but there's nothing else available. So that's what they go after. And when they strip that bark off, it disconnects the plant from the lower root system to the upper part. And if they happen to do that damage all the way around the trunk of that small tree, then you've girdled the tree. You've separated it from its root system, and it's likely a loss. Now, what's interesting, what will happen on some of these trees that are girdled is they may still leaf out in the spring. And then late spring, early summer, they'll start to die. And so you'll think, oh, you'll see the damage. It's really apparent right now. You'll see the damage. And it's a legitimate thing to wait and see, right? Like, there's no reason to remove it quite yet. So you'll wait and see, and it'll leaf out, and you'll think, hooray. And then in late May, it'll start to die. And it's because that upper part of the tree has some stored reserves in it. That was enough to put that first flush out, but it wasn't connected to its root system, so it can't maintain that long term, and then you start to see the dieback.
So that's if it's been chewed all the way around, the bark completely severed. What about something that's
just
some
one-sided?
50-50?
Yeah.
Well, if it's 50-50, the tree will survive. There's that connection there, but it's been seriously damaged. And it obviously can't afford any more damage in the future. There's nothing you can do to help the tree as far as painting it, putting on a wound dressing, pruning paint. That doesn't help. Wrapping it doesn't help. So basically in the future, you have to make sure it doesn't happen again. So I would make sure next fall that you have chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around that trunk to make sure they can't do it again.
And it should be at least 36 inches tall. I think this winter was a great example. If you put out a 12 or an 18-inch fence, the snow cover was high enough that they just hopped on top. And then the damage, instead of being at ground level, was 12 or 18 inches off the ground. And it's still a problem there, too.
Right, for sure. What about other animals?
So we've seen, one of the other things that rabbits often do this time of year is bother a lot of shrubs. But the nice thing about shrubs are many of them sucker from the base. And so if you see this damage, you can wait and see what comes back, prune out what doesn't, and then that plant will kind of sucker back. And it may take a couple years to get back to where it was, depending on how severe the damage was. I know we have some shrubs at Ryman Gardens that were just annihilated. And it seems like it happens overnight. And in some cases, it really does. So you can remove that stuff, let them kind of sucker back. On the young trees, you know, they might sucker from the base, but sometimes that's a rootstock. And so that's not the same tree as what you purchased. It's a different, the rootstock's a different plant. And that's not a desirable, in many cases, a desirable tree. And even if it does sucker, and in theory, you could maybe train it into a new tree, it will never be a high-quality tree. And so it's probably better, since most of these trees are usually young when they get this damage, it's probably better to cut your losses and start over instead of trying to save it and train it and turn it into something that might be salvageable, because it's never high quality after that.
So what you're saying is, if it was a tree that had been grafted and the damage is on the part of the tree that you wanted, that is the reason you have it, what you would end up with potentially if it survived would be the tree growing from the roots, which is that different type of tree.
Yeah. And often it doesn't have the tasty fruit or the pretty flowers that you bought that tree for. And almost all fruit trees, for example, are grafted. And fruit trees are a big target for bunnies. They seem to be a preferred one.
What about deer? There seem to be more of those around here.
Yeah, deer have been really rough on a lot of evergreens in particular. Again, they're looking for something to eat. Green tissue is going to be better, what they're after. And so we've seen damage in particular on things like yews, arborvitae. I know I have some camicypress at home that got really hit hard, but they'll also eat on things that you wouldn't think they would bother because of the texture, things like spruce and pine and fir. And the unfortunate thing is many of these conifers don't grow or respond the same way to this kind of injury that many of our flowering trees and shrubs do. So they don't have as many secondary buds, and sometimes the deer even eat those. And so when you see extensive damage, the tree may never recover from it. Or it may be a situation where you have a browse line, so they can only reach up so high, and you will lose everything below, say, about 6 feet and down. And again, you just wait until early summer, late spring, see what comes back. Yew tends to come back fairly well. Spruces and firs, not so well. But you kind of wait and see and then prune out what doesn't green up again.
We have a question from Dave in Cedar Falls. He wants to know, if a tree or shrub is completely girdled, should he take those out now?
With the trees, I think I probably would sometime this spring because they're just not going to come back, because most are grafted and that rootstock is not the same tree. If it's a shrub, I would keep it.
I would keep it,
because
too.
It's going to sucker back. It may take a few years to recover, but it's going to sucker back.
If you have a question for Aaron Style from Ryman Gardens or Richard Giron, ISU Extension horticulturist, you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be taking calls coming up here soon. The number is 866-780-9100. And let's just, before we move on, talk a little bit about pesky little critters like voles.
Yeah. So with the snow melting the last week or so across much of the state, we've noticed a lot of people talking about kind of winding or meandering trails that show up in their lawns. And these are usually caused by voles. So these are little mouse-like creatures. They feed on vegetation throughout the winter, and they've been feeding on vegetation under the snow cover all winter. And now that the snow has melted, it reveals itself. Most cases, unless it is extensive, which in most cases it isn't, the grass recovers just fine. Once it starts to green up and starts growing, as long as you're treating your lawn nice, have an appropriate mowing height, water when it's super dry, the grass recovers relatively quickly. And usually within a couple of weeks after growth begins, you don't notice the trails anymore. So they're not really a point of alarm. They're more curiosity and a little weird, because you don't see them every year in the same spot. So they take people for surprise.
Are the voles always there, and it's just that we don't notice them, but because of the way the snow was this year, we noticed them?
They like to hide. So in the wintertime, when you have snow cover, they have that perfect cover, and then that's when they feed on things around your yard. But as soon as the snow melts, they go back into brush and tall weeds and things like that.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. My guests today are Richard Giron from Iowa State Extension and Aaron Style from Ryman Gardens. We'll be taking calls about winter damage and preparing your lawn and garden for the summer. The number is 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Amy Mayer in for Charity Nebbe today.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. Today we're talking about winter damage. My guests are Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Style from Ryman Gardens. And we have a call from Doug in Mount Vernon.
And I have an old, beautiful magnolia tree. Is it too late to prune it? I know they blossom quickly.
No, it's not too late. I would say you want to do that sometime in the next couple weeks. Should be fine.
Done on the bottom, by not around the trunk, but on some limbs, and I thought I'd try to get rid of it.
You should be fine.
I love your program. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Doug. And we also have a caller from Cedar Rapids. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask about my soft arborvitae. It seems to have more winter burn this year than ever. And it's not just rusty leaves and foliage. It's the large chunks of green this time.
That are gone or are...
Yeah, it's dropped out of the bush, and it's a beautiful privacy hedge.
So,
and I'm seeing large chunks of it come off, and it's never done that before.
And they're are they laying on the ground or are they just gone?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I've been sweeping them up here, and I hope I don't lose them. I don't know. Uncertain as to how tall these softer arborvitae can get. They've been here on the property for quite some time.
And these sections on the ground, are they green or are they brown?
The sections that are falling off are both rusty colored and brand new. I mean, very green.
My first inclination is that the browning is desiccation over the winter, which is fairly common on something like arborvitae, especially with a lot of prevailing wind. You know, making sure they're well watered into the fall goes a long way to help with that. The sections that are falling off, my first thought is browsing, and in particular from something like deer. Although deer usually, you know, rabbits are notorious for taking something off and leaving it there. Deer usually don't do that. Although you can kind of look and see if the cut is really clean or if it seems to be like a break, then it's probably not deer. But if it looks like somebody kind of came up and kind of ripped it off, that is most likely deer, especially if it's below 6 feet off the ground. And they may be taking it off and realizing it's half dead and not eating it or something like that. But when you mention that sections are falling off, that's the first thing that comes to mind. I don't know, Richard, if there's anything else.
Yeah, normally green things don't fall off.
No.
So if you have green things on the ground, something must have dislodged that branch or that growth. And so,
may I ask, how tall can a soft arborvitae be? I mean, some of these are 8-10 feet tall.
It depends upon the species or cultivar. Mm-hmm. Some of these get to be 20-25 feet tall. So it depends upon that species or cultivar.
Brian, thanks for that call. We have another caller on the line. Kathy from Kanawha is joining us now. Go ahead, Kathy.
I want to know if I put crabgrass preventer down, if it's going to hurt my rose bushes, peonies, phlox, asparagus, rhubarb.
Now, if you put on a typical lawn pre-emergent, it's not labeled for use in the garden as far as vegetable garden. So you wouldn't want to apply it directly to the garden, okay? But if you apply that to your yard, it will not affect the trees or shrubs or flowering plants near it. Should not. So you shouldn't worry about that. Just make sure that you put it where you want it. And as far as applying it in Kanawha, I would say probably the last week or so in April or the first week in May would be a good time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And now we have a caller with a vole problem. Goldie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, it's a mole problem.
Mole.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And they ruined our yard last fall, and they're starting to do it again, and I want to know what to do.
Yeah, moles are very hard to control. They're basically feeding on earthworms and grubs in the soil. So you really can't put anything to the lawn that's going to prevent that. You basically have to catch them. You have to trap them.
Oh, my goodness.
And unfortunately, it requires persistence, because you're not going to catch it very easily. And so it may take an effort over maybe 4 or 5, 6 weeks before you finally catch it. So you have to keep on trapping, keep on moving it around the yard, and eventually if you're persistent, you'll catch it. But it does require persistence. It's not easy to do. They're actually very smart little creatures, so just keep on trying.
Is there a certain kind of trap to use?
There are various types. I think the most common is the harpoon type, where you basically push it into the ground. There's two legs, and you have this plate that has little spears on it, and you pull it up. And you partially press down the tunnel, and if they come back, the pressure that they exert upward sets a trap off, and it comes down and basically kills them. So that's probably the most common.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to keep on moving it around because they seldom use the same tunnel again, so you have to keep on moving it around. If it's been there for a couple of days and haven't caught anything, keep on moving it.
Go ahead.
I'll try.
Okay.
Good luck. Is a mole problem likely a one mole problem or likely there's more than one?
Well, they don't live in big families. That's the good thing. So if you have them, it's probably just one or two. But it's amazing how fast they can tunnel. And so you go out in the morning and you see all these tunnels and you think, I must have four or five. You probably have one or two. So okay. That's the good news. But the thing is, if you live in an area where they have a favorable environment, if you get rid of that one, you may have another one that moves in. So it's not permanent.
Right. Okay. All right. We have a call now from Des Moines. Tom, go ahead. Tom, are you there? Okay. Well, we'll move on to a caller in Mount Vernon. Let's see. Jewel, go ahead.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Love the program. And I have a question about spring grass planting. I reseed spring and fall, and I know that August 15th is the date you recommended. But what's the spring date? I do it under my maple trees where it's dense shade, and I have difficulty getting grass there.
Yeah, maple trees are the toughest because they have very dense shade. They also have a very, very dense root system right near the surface. Mm-hmm. So the grass has a very, very difficult time surviving in that environment. I'd be shooting for probably around mid-April.
Mid-April?
Yeah, mid-April okay. or so. And what you're going to have to do is at very least go out there and kind of rake it. So you break mm-hmm. the soil surface, then sow your seed, and then very lightly rake the seed into the soil, and then keep that seed bed moist for at least 2 or 3 weeks to allow the grass seed to come up. Hopefully it will. But it's a very difficult environment, so it's hard to keep that grass there permanently. It may kind of fade away again within a year or two. So
yes, that's why I do it every year.
And as far as sowing grass seed, you want to select a seed mix that basically consists of the fine leaf fescues. Things like okay. creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue. Okay. They are the most shade tolerant of the grasses that we grow. Kentucky okay. bluegrass does not do well in the shade, so don't sow that. Look for the fine leaf fescues, creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue.
Would you recommend the seeds that sort of the dense or very dense?
I'm not sure of the question.
Oh, well, there's seed when you buy it bulk that'll say this is for dense shade, and another one that's separate that'll say this is for very dense shade.
I would look at the label and see what it contains.
Okay.
Because they have to tell you exactly what they contain. And you want to find one that has a lot, percentage-wise, of these fescues.
Okay. Thank you. I love the program. And I also use the starter fertilizer on it and lime, too.
Yeah, you shouldn't need the lime, I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Thank
you. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for your call. If you have a question about your lawn or garden, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. And we're going to try again here to get Tom from Des Moines on the air. Tom, go ahead.
780-9100.
Tom, you're going to need to turn off your radio.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tom.
Hello? Okay, my question was, let's see, wait a minute. My question was, about spikes. Do they make a spike or something that you can pound around the tree in the root system so that it will kill it? I want to get rid of this tree.
Well, not really. but you have this tree that you don't want. How big is it?
Oh, it's probably 20 foot tall.
You want to kill it, okay?
Yeah.
You can always cut it down. That's one option. Another option would be to drill some holes in the trunk of the tree and then apply some Roundup to those holes, and that probably should kill the tree.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. okay.
Because,
all right, thank you.
Because when you apply it to those wounds, the tissue absorbs it and then moves it down into the root system, it should kill it.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
It'll keep coming back. Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's take an email question from Emma. She says, what do we do if a rabbit, we think it's a rabbit because of the droppings nearby, has been nibbling on our blueberry bushes over the winter?
Yeah, this is frustrating. and blueberry would be a favorite for a bunny. The most effective approach here is going to be prevention. So we know that rabbits really enjoy things in the rose family, a lot of our tree fruits and things like blueberries. And so putting up that chicken wire fence at least 36 inches tall, just a couple pieces of rebar and a piece of chicken wire. You may need to pin it down to the ground with a landscape pin or a U-shaped piece of metal so that they don't get underneath of it. And do it directly around the shrub. Don't try to cage or fence in like large areas, because then once they get inside, they're free to roam, right? So do it directly around the shrub. And in terms of what she can do now that she sees the damage, there's not much she can do. But thankfully, blueberry is a suckering, sprouting shrub, so it should recover. It might take a year or two to get back to the size it was, depending on how much damage was there. But it should recover okay.
Well, that's good news, because I also have blueberries that the bunnies have pretty much decimated.
Yeah, they can be pretty ruthless. And on the smaller shrubs, they'll snip the stems right off and prune it for you.
Another email question from Dylan. I've been given permission to transplant several grapevines and raspberry canes this year. When would be the best time to dig them up? And are there any special considerations I should take during digging or when replanting?
Grapes are very hard to transplant. They have a very, very deep root system. So if that's an established plant, I don't think it's practical. I don't think you can do it. What you could do is go out there right now and take some cuttings, like 12-inch cuttings of the canes, and just press those in the ground this spring, and they may root. As far as the raspberries, I would do that probably in the next couple weeks or so, early April.
Okay. All right, great. Let's go back to the phones. We have Bobbert on the line from Cedar Rapids. Go ahead.
Good morning, and enjoy your program. I've got a silly question because it's more out of curiosity. You mentioned moles. What happens to them during the winter? What happens to worms during the winter?
I'm not a worm expert. I would assume they're probably like moles, where they may go down deeper into the soil and stay there during the winter. That's what moles do, is they go down very deep into the soil. And I would think the worms would do that too, possibly.
Yeah, a lot of insects do that too. Mm-hmm. A lot of grubs and stuff will burrow down lower to try to get below the frost line and hang out down there, kind of in a hibernation-like state, or just in a kind of slow state until spring comes.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. You bet. Bye.
And let's see. Mary in Fairfield has a question about Creeping Charlie. Go ahead, Mary.
What do I do about the Creeping Charlie that's taking over my yard? I have three grandchildren that play out there all the time, and an old dog, and lots of songbirds, so I don't want to use chemicals. Is there any options that you can give me?
Maybe you could just get the grandkids to pull it up.
it's very hard to pull up because it's so low growing. You really don't have very good options. One option is just to tolerate its presence. Otherwise, you're going to probably have to use a herbicide.
If it's taking over the yard, the grass,
mm-hmm.
What would be the options that you would recommend?
I would say if you still have a good stand of grass, that I would try to keep the grass and kill the ground ivy. And I would go out in the fall with a broadleaf herbicide, and I would apply that around late September, early October. Mm-hmm. And then I would come back a month later and do it again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as using something, basically, something that contains triclopyr is the most effective. That's T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, triclopyr. So you want to have a compound or product that contains triclopyr, and that should do a very, very good job. Now, if you have a situation where it's mainly ground ivy and you have very little grass, then I would say it's not salvageable, and I would simply destroy the whole thing. You know, destroy it by some means, and then go ahead and sow some grass seed in late summer.
Yeah, and one of the ways you could destroy it without herbicide is to smother it. So several layers of cardboard or newspaper, an old rug, you know, whatever is to your aesthetic. But that's one option for several weeks. I would probably pull up as much as I could before I tried to smother it, try to put it under as much stress as possible. If you're looking for a non-herbicide.
Okay. And it's also in the flower bed. What would you do about it in the flower bed?
In the flower bed, it's going to have to be pulling and digging. Now, the good thing about ground ivy is it doesn't have a deep root system. The root system is not that deep, so you can actually dig it up. But the thing is, you have to get it all, because as the plant grows, as it sends out these vines, it roots periodically. And if you leave a portion that has roots on it, it's just going to keep on growing. So you have to get it all, so you have to be very, very careful.
Yes, so you have to be very persistent.
Yes,
so triclopyr is in the triclopyr that you do in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you have to keep children away from it when you do it? And do you do it before rain, or what do you on the application?
Yeah, ideally you want to put this on where it's not going to rain for at least 48 hours. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And as far as children and pets, keep them off the area for at least 24 hours.
24 hours. All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Mary. And let's get one more call in here before the break. We have Frank on the line from Ames with an indoor plants question. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Actually, it's a two-part question. It's about indoor vegetable plants. I have a couple of containers of peppers and tomatoes, and they have flowers, but they're not fruiting.
And you know what, Frank? We're going to take this answer. We'll take a quick break, and we'll get to your question about those plants and vegetables after the break. Stay tuned, and we'll get back to you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio with ISU Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron and Ryman Gardens Assistant Director Aaron Stile. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. If you have a question, you can call us at 866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And just before the break, we had a call. A person's concerned about tomatoes and peppers he's growing indoors, and they're not fruiting. Aaron?
Yeah, it sounds like they're flowering indoors, which means there's plenty of light and all of those things. It's likely a case of not anything to pollinate the flowers. So most of the time, especially with tomatoes and peppers, you can set up a small fan when it's in bloom, and that will help transfer and move, kind of shake and move these plants around enough to transfer that pollen so that you can get fertilization and then the fruit can start to form. You could also just shake the plants periodically, or if you wanted to have a little bit of fun, you could play bee with a little paintbrush and just go in there when the pollen is receptive, I guess, and kind of go in there and move some stuff around. But most folks who grow this kind of stuff indoors find the fan to be the most practical solution for this.
And Frank, does that sound helpful?
Well, I do have a fan blowing on them, so I'm not quite sure what else to do.
It may be paintbrush time, I think.
I was thinking either that or a Q-tip.
Yeah,
a Q-tip would work well, too.
All right, Frank, good luck with that.
And I had a second question, too.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, so I'm getting ready for farmers markets, and I want to grow some hydroponics plants. What do you think are the best ones? I mean, I'm thinking of lettuce, basil, and cilantro.
Boy, I couldn't say offhand as far as varieties. You may want to check with Ajay Nair at Iowa State. He's our commercial vegetable grower, and he might know if certain varieties or cultivars would do better hydroponically or not.
Mm-hmm. All right, Frank, good luck with that.
I've been watching hours of video on YouTube, so.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Frank. We're going to move on and take another call now. We have Sue on the line from Windsor Heights. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi, this is Sue. I have a conundrum as far as finding a tree that will fit in our front yard. We're facing the northeast side. That's where I need to have the tree, and it's going to be between a locust tree and a maple. We had one taken out, and we have a spot available, and I've been thinking all winter what we could put in there and kind of investigating or researching. And I haven't come up with one yet, so I thought maybe you might have an idea since we're facing the north. And being on a corner as well.
How much space do you have for the tree?
Well, let me see. We could, it would, it, the we would need to have it tall enough. And I would say we've got about 30 feet out there.
Okay.
And both of the trees that we do have are older trees. We moved here in the late 90s, and they were old when we moved in. So we're kind of gradually changing them out, you might say.
Okay. Well, the honey locust is a fairly common tree. It has very fine foliage. It's very adaptable. It will grow.
But we have one here already.
Okay. That's, okay.
That's and it's an older tree, but it looks like it's doing well.
Okay.
Okay.
We need to have something in between the maple and the locust tree.
Oh, okay. Something different. Okay.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
Then I would probably look at maybe a linden.
Okay. Let me write this down.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about Japanese beetles?
Well.
Is that,
pardon
me?
They do feed on the plant, but that doesn't really affect them that much. And some years are not that bad. But the linden is a very nice tree. It's very symmetrical. It's pretty adaptable itself. It's very, very dense.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very distinctive as far as the shape and fairly easy to grow. So I would definitely look at a linden. I think they're a very nice tree.
I would add ginkgo to the list as well. That's another pretty adaptable tree, great fall color. And there are a couple of varieties that are out there that are a bit more narrow in shape that would fit very nicely. Princeton Century is one that I'm thinking of in particular. But there are multiples out there, and they make good residential shade trees.
Are they tall enough that when people come down the street come from the southeast side around our house, they can see traffic? That's one of the things that I was concerned about, that it would block the vision of the traffic.
With time, the tree can easily be limbed up to a height that would allow that. And when the tree is smaller, it shouldn't be as wide, and so it shouldn't hopefully block too much of the view if sighted properly.
Oh, okay. Well, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sue. We have a couple more calls returning to the theme of moles, so let's see what concerns we have here. Tom in Milan, Illinois, go ahead.
Yes, I've got one suggestion on moles that has worked well for me. I've got about six or seven different lawn spinners. They're about a foot in diameter, and the wind just makes them spin, and the rod going down, there's enough noise coming down into the ground that the moles have all disappeared, and I have not had any problem with them since I started putting those out. And they just actually make the place look a whole lot better for me.
All
right. The other question I have is I have hydrangeas that I basically let go. And I want to get out there and prune them out so that they're thinned out a little bit. And how much can I take out? I'm thinking it takes between a third and a half of what I've got this year.
Yeah, it kind of depends upon what type it is. Do you know what type it is?
No, I do not.
Does it have like the nice ball-shaped flowers, or are they more elongated in terms of?
Elongated ones.
Okay, so it's more likely a panicle hydrangea.
That'd be my guess, too. So you could take out a third. That would be no problem. It blooms basically in late summer. It has these cone-shaped flowers, and that basically blooms on new wood. So you could prune it back about a third this spring, and that should be perfectly fine.
A third again next year, and a third again the year after?
Probably not so much thereafter, but I would think maybe 10, 15% next year. 20%.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call, Tom. And let's now go to Sharon in Solon, who also has some ideas about moles. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi. I just wanted to add that I've had mole problems, and I've used castor oil. I don't really want to kill any little animals, even moles. And I have had success with buying castor oil at the hardware store that you just attach to your hose and you spray it over your yard. And you have to apply it like once a month, but it sent all my moles away. And I was wondering your thoughts on that. The second question I have is the use of nematodes to control grubs, but I'm worried that the nematodes might also kill earthworms, and if you had any information on that for me.
Well, as far as controlling grubs with, like, nematodes, in theory it sounds great, but in practice they're not very effective. So it's probably not going to do a very good job. As far as the moles, the castor oil, there were products a few years ago that actually you could buy and apply, but they're no longer widely available because they didn't prove to be very effective, unfortunately. So there was some promise there, but for the most part, they weren't very effective.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sharon. And let's go to Wendy in Iowa City. Wants a question about when to leave a garden fallow. Wendy, go ahead.
Yes, I've had a home garden for probably 6 or 7 years, and I've rotated different crops through, but I'm thinking of leaving it fallow this year to maybe regain some of the nutrients in the soil. I guess I want to know, is there anything special I should do or could do, A, to keep it from being overrun with weeds, and then B, to really beef it up so next year I should get a good harvest?
You could sow a cover crop. You could actually do that 2 or 3 times possibly during the growing season, and then till that material into the soil. So you could use a cover crop, absolutely. And that would tend to keep out the weeds also.
What kind of cover crop would you suggest?
You could use cereal rye, annual rye, a number of different types you could use, absolutely.
All right. Okay. Good luck. Let's go now to Bob in Carlisle. And Bob.
No, I finally got it.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question about some plants that I overwintered in my garage. They were potted. And they seem to be viable yet. So I was asking if I could maybe bring those out within the next few days and get some of this moisture we're supposed to be getting.
I think as long as it doesn't drop below freezing, you're fine. You'll have to keep an eye on the nighttime temperatures. And as soon as you see it getting, I would use probably 40 as my barometer. If it drops below 40, that's when I know I need to shuttle them back inside. And if it's a very warm day, or if we have a series of really warm days, know that they may get pushed out a little early, and that makes it even harder for them if it gets a cold snap again. So shuttling them in will be really important. But yeah, but if you want to take advantage of the sun and
But they were kept in an unheated garage, and they seem to have survived. So
All right. Good luck. Thanks for the call. We're going to take another call now from Dick in Des Moines, and his question is. Looks to be about crabapple trees. Go ahead, Dick.
Yes, I have a couple crabapple trees in my front yard, and the roots of the trees, there's some roots that have gotten out into the yard that are exposed. Can I cover those?
You can with maybe wood chips. I would not cover them with soil, but the roots are basically near the surface because they need to breathe. And if you put on too much soil, let's say you bring in, 6 inches, 8 inches of soil, you may actually suffocate some of the roots. And that's not a good thing. So I wouldn't use soil, but you could use like wood chips as a mulch. It's a nice mulch, attractive. And I would put on 2 or 3 inches. But as far as soil, if you want to go with soil, do not apply more than 2 inches.
All right.
Okay.
Dick, thanks for your call. And let's go now to Carolyn in Cedar Rapids. Carolyn, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. We have a garden patch that's been infested with ground bees, and we'd like to rip out that garden and eradicate the bees and use that space for something else. Is this the time of year to do that, and how do we make sure that we've gotten that nest of bees?
Right. When did you notice these bees? Was it late in the season last year?
No, they've been there for a couple of seasons, so the garden is laid fallow.
Well, most ground bees move to a new location every year, so most species do. And so you may just have a situation where you just have, like, the best spot for these things to keep creating a new nest, because most don't overwinter as a huge colony. The queen will overwinter and then establish a new colony in a new spot. And it may just be that they're not moving very far away, if that's the case. I think This time of year would be when you can kind of investigate. They usually don't become really bad until late in the season, or to a point where people really start to notice them until late in the season. Most of them would utilize burrows that were created by other things. And so if you can get in there and kind of help cover up some of that stuff, in theory, early in the season, there's a lot fewer insects in that area. So at least as it relates to these ground nesting bees, and you shouldn't run into as many problems as you would later in the season.
Well, we have grandchildren, so we want to make sure that that area is cleared out and nobody gets stung.
Right, right. Well, good luck, Carolyn. Hope you are able to take care of that. Let's go now to a caller in Fairfield. Jim, go ahead. Jim, are you there?
Yep.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to, I've got two questions. I'm trying to control chiggers and tall grass and some prairie around the property, and then I'm battling autumn olives, and I've used a few different strategies to try to deal with them, and they all seem to work about 30% of the time. So I don't know if you have suggestions for those two things.
Well, with chiggers, I would check with our entomologist, our extension entomologist. His name is Donald Lewis, and he should be in next week. He's gone this week, but it's Donald Lewis. His phone number is 515-294-1101, and he is our extension entomologist. As far as the autumn olive, is that in a pasture, or what kind of situation is it?
Well, they show up in the prairie, and then they also seem to show up right at the sort of edge of the woods.
Okay. Large numbers or just a few?
I've got them all over the place, to be honest.
Okay. Then I think I would check maybe with your DNR district forester, your Iowa DNR district forester. They deal with invasive plants, and that definitely is an invasive plant. And they probably have some suggestions as far as herbicides.
Fair enough.
All right. Thanks for your call. And I did see one quick message about when to plant. Approximately what time in April do we apply our first fertilizer applications to our yards?
I would say in central Iowa. I would say in central Iowa, basically mid to late April would be a good time, typically.
Okay. Great. Any final comments from you on getting back out through the summer? I mean, into the summer?
Yeah, I think, you know, this time of year is always so exciting, and we get out into the garden. I would say one thing I would advise folks is it is still very wet out there. So if you're really interested in getting out and working in the garden, make sure it's not too wet. You can do a lot of damage walking around in muddy, wet soil in your garden. So let it dry out a little bit more before you start clearing away all that debris and start getting ready for your new garden plants to come up in the spring.
All right, that's Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We also heard today from ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Katherine Perkins, with production assistance today from Jason Burns. On-demand audio of Talk of Iowa is available at iowapublicradio.org, and podcasts of the program are available wherever you get your podcasts. We always welcome your comments and questions about the show. Contact us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org.